Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Gretchen Goldman. She's a research director with the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And we've invited her to talk about some changes afoot at the Environmental Protection Agency by the administrator appointed by Donald Trump, Scott Pruitt. Gretchen, thank you a lot for being here tonight. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott.
So I think many of our listeners know about the Union of Concerned Scientists or, of course, have heard of it. But tell us a little bit about the work that you do there.
Sure. The Union of Concerned Scientists was founded in 1969 by a group of students and professors at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And they were concerned about the direction of science and it going toward military purposes. And since then, we've expanded to cover a whole variety of issues from sustainable agriculture to climate change to nuclear weapons. And I work at the Center for Science and Democracy at UCS. And we look at science in decision making for the government, either at the federal level or the state or local levels. And we're really looking at to make sure that science can inform policy decisions, that people have access to scientific information. And that's been keeping us busy lately under this administration.
Thanks for that, Gretchen. So as we begin our discussion about some of the moves afoot at the Environmental Protection Agency under Trump-appointed Administrator Scott Pruitt, maybe you can speak to some of the most alarming general patterns and shifts that you see at the EPA, and we can zero in on these science advisory boards that we've invited you here to focus on. But maybe you could give us the overview as we begin.
Sure. The EPA has been one of the harder hit agencies when it comes to affecting the science that goes on there and the scientists being targeted by this administration. Administrator Pruitt, of course, came from a background of being openly hostile to the EPA. He, for years, sued the agency over many of its science-based rules, including the ozone rule, the Clean Power Plan. So he has a long record of fighting the EPA in a lot of their work, which, of course, is around their mission of protecting public health and the environment. And so when he came in, he started really wreaking havoc and trying to change a lot of things that have long been in place there. And not just, I'm not just talking about policy decisions, which, you know, of course, when new administrations come in, they have different policy preferences and that can change directions of the agency. But he actually went about dismantling the process by which science is used in policymaking at the EPA. So right out of the gate, we saw some gag orders. We saw scientists prevented from talking to the public. We've since seen them make very unscientific decisions. One of the more egregious ones was around a pesticide called chlorpyrifos, and the administrator Pruitt chose not to ban this pesticide despite scientific evidence that it harms children and farm workers who are exposed to it in serious ways.
Thanks for that, Gretchen. So when we talk about these science advisory boards, maybe you can start off from where we heard last week. I guess there was a speech by Scott Pruitt at the Heritage Foundation, an extremely conservative and influential group in Washington, where there were signals made by Scott Pruitt that he was going to be eliminating or banning any scientists who received EPA grants from serving on EPA advisory boards. But maybe take it from there.
Yeah, we heard this, and it was very alarming to hear him go that direction. And first, I might say we've seen that concept before of trying to ban scientists from serving on advisory committees if they've received an EPA grant. We've seen this come up in legislative proposals before. So the chair of the House Science Committee, Lamar Smith, had previously introduced the EPA Science Advisory Board Reform Act, where he had introduced for many years these ideas about trying to limit the kinds of scientists that can be on these advisory boards. And we're seeing now Administrator Pruitt just take an executive branch strategy on that and just use his authority to change that. And so this is a really problematic proposal. I want to be clear about what this sort of means. So advisory committees are bodies of external scientists, so scientists from outside the government. They, a lot of them come from academia and other places where they're doing scientific work, and they volunteer that expertise and their time to help inform the U.S. government on a variety of issues. And this happens across federal agencies. At the EPA, science advisors provide advice on everything from air pollution to water quality to chemical safety hazards. And so these advisory committees play a very crucial role in getting external science advice to the agency, and it gives them that extra power, and it allows the public to see if the agency is making science-based decisions, because we have this independent body that can, you know, help call them on anything that isn't scientific and really hold them to account. And so these advisory committees really operate separately, and that's worked very, very well for many years. And what we're seeing is Administrator Pruitt is starting to try to dismantle that process. And so by banning scientists that received grants from the EPA to do scientific research and further science in a particular field, is really excluding scientists that are your best experts from being able to advise the agency. It's very, very strange. The best analogy that I came up with is that it's really like saying a teacher who last year received a teaching award doesn't get to serve on the PTA. You know, and I don't know why you would not want to give your best minds a seat at the table, but that's exactly what Administrator Pruitt is doing.
Now, I wonder if would you be able to address or address for our audience the claim that's out there somewhere among the Trump appointees at the EPA, including Scott Pruitt, that there's the specter of conflict of interest for these scientists who receive EPA grants to fund their research?
Yeah, it's really turning the idea of conflict of interest on its head. So you know, it's hard to even explain what their position is, because it doesn't make any sense if you think about what these grants are. So, you know, a typical EPA grant would go toward furthering scientific understanding on a certain topic. So I'm an air pollution scientist, so something that, you know, I might apply to get a grant for would be studying multi-pollutant interactions and their health effects. And then if I were to also serve on a committee, I might get asked something like whether or not the EPA was going in the right direction when it came to water quality testing. And so, you know, if I had this grant on air pollution, how does that even tell me how I'm supposed to provide advice on water quality, right? They're totally different realms. It's really apples and oranges here. And I don't even if you wanted to try to come up with an answer on an advisory committee that you felt like the EPA wanted, you know, it's not even clear what that would be, you know? So I don't know. Have they just sort of created this argument and decided that independent scientists, particularly those from academic institutions, that they would be conflicted? But meanwhile, they've added to the committee many people from industry, so people with strong ties to industries that are affected by EPA regulation, and those people are unrestricted in that they're able to serve despite those very clear conflicts of interest. So they've really flipped this idea around and turned it on its head.
What about the idea that I think Scott Pruitt and the Trump administration in general has been floating for since they got into office, that somehow scientists are getting rich off these grants? And speaking as a scientist yourself, you can address the wealth factor there for scientists like yourself.
Sure.
But yeah, it seems that there's a claim here that people are like bending science so they could get on the gravy train to get rich, you know, and have couple of vacation homes and expensive cars and go the way of a lot of the folks that are now being arrested in the Trump administration.
Yeah. You know, Scott, if that was the goal of scientists, was to live this lavish lifestyle, they clearly chose the wrong career path, because these grants, which, you know, when you look at them in total, of course, it looks like a decent amount of money, but that's not going into scientists' pockets. That's going toward funding students and postdocs and fees to submit papers to journals and lab equipment and travel to the field. Many research requires very expensive trips and flights with airplane monitors, and, you know, there's all kinds of scientific expenses that come with a lot of these grants. And so it really isn't an issue of scientists getting rich off of this issue. It's more, you know, an opportunity for scientists to be able to stay afloat and do a lot of the research that they want to do.
We're speaking with Gretchen Goldman, a research director with the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And we're talking about some new regulations at the EPA, where they have banned scientists who receive EPA grants from serving on EPA science advisory boards. And Gretchen, what can you tell us about the vacancies that are now left on these science advisory boards? Who's filling those vacancies? As you said a moment ago, there are scientists affiliated and employed by the very industries that the EPA regulates. Are those the folks that are filling those vacancies?
There are, actually. Alarmingly, several of those positions are being filled by people who are coming from the oil and gas industry or the chemical manufacturing industry, places that really are affected by EPA decisions. And so this is a very clear conflict. And, you know, it would be difficult to imagine these people making decisions in the public interest when they come from that background and haven't disclosed all of those conflicts as well. And there's also some other positions being left empty completely. Some of the committees have been reduced in size, so they've cut back on this who's serving and how many people are serving. They've cut down the number of meetings that those agencies have per year, so they're doing less activity overall. And then we see sort of another set of people that are either unqualified or sort of less qualified than the people that were on the committee before, or they're openly hostile to the agency's mission. So there's some people that, you know, have been openly critical of the EPA and its role in protecting public health and the environment, which is, of course, its mission. So we're really seeing some concerning developments about who is now fulfilling these committees, and we'll be watching closely to see what direction that goes.
Gretchen, maybe you can address the whole issue of the purpose of these scientific advisory boards. As I understand it, scientific advisory boards are not panels to create or to debate the pros and cons of any given policy from a political or economic perspective, but science advisory boards are purely and very simply to debate the scientific facts surrounding EPA decisions on regulations that they may impose on industry. Is that right? And is Scott Pruitt really turning these EPA scientific advisory boards into something completely different than they were originally designed for?
It's a good question. I think it remains to be seen what direction he takes the boards and what sorts of questions he charges with them. But historically, committees are, as you said, charged with questions that surround the science. And so they're asked things like, you know, there's one committee called the Board of Scientific Counselors, and their charge is to look at EPA research directions and think about what types of research areas the EPA should go into in the future when it's thinking about resources and staffing and which questions to ask. And there's another one called the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee, and that one just thinks about clean air policies, so air pollution issues. And one of their crucial roles is to look at the state of the science every 5 years on many of the pollutants that we regulate in the ambient air. So ones you might have heard of, this is soot and smog, so ozone and particulate matter pollution. And they're charged with looking at the science on the link between those pollutants and health effects and decide what level of pollution would protect public health. And they're charged with that, and that's a really important role that they play because the EPA decides every 5 years on those pollutants what the level of air pollution should be, and they set a standard. And as a result of this process, we have much cleaner air in this country than we've had in the past. And so, you know, over several decades, we've seen air pollution drop dramatically and the health impacts have dropped dramatically. And we're really enjoying a much better quality of life because of that drop in air pollution. And that's due to this science-based policy we have that relies on the science advisors that have been always there to tell the agency what the science says about where the standard should be. So those are two examples of really crucial roles that science advisory boards play at the EPA. And it's worth saying, I think, too, that they're not political bodies. They're not making decisions at the EPA. They're simply offering advice and guidance that's publicly available and that allows us to see if the EPA is making decisions in the public interest. So it's really to everyone's benefit that we do maintain independent science advisory boards that can watchdog the agency.
Gretchen, is there any way to challenge these decisions on the part of EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt and the Trump administration in general as they pursue this new direction at the EPA?
I think there's a lot of things that we can do to push back. The Union of Concerned Scientists has teams of scientists in every state where we work with them to push back and hold the administration accountable and hold Congress accountable on different things that they do to oppose science and science-based policymaking. On the advisory board issue in particular, we're going to watch very closely and see what Administrator Pruitt does with these committees. We're also exploring legal options and seeing if there is anything in the courts that we can do to push back. I think there will be a lot of opportunities to really make sure that the advisory boards continue to make decisions that are in the public interest and that follow the science. I think this will be really crucial on this issue and also on the EPA more broadly as we move forward, especially as we start to see all kinds of things happen at the agency where Administrator Pruitt is starting to dismantle the process by which we use science there and starting to dismiss or compromise the science and the scientists that work at the EPA. And so we'll be supporting them as much as we can as well.
Gretchen, I wanted to ask you a broader question about the direction of the Republican Party. The Republican Party, and certainly first and foremost Donald Trump, have devoted a lot of energy into creating doubts about the value of scientific research, especially when the results of that research could lead the government to regulate an industry and or cut into corporate profits. I wondered if you'd discuss what you think the long-term danger of this political agenda could mean to the country. And what do you think drives it? Because certainly Republicans, conservatives have children. They care about the air they breathe and the water they drink and climate change in the long run, even though many of them profess to deny that climate change exists. But what do you think is driving this? And again, what is the danger to the country as we kind of pursue this kind of ostrich-like kind of stance where we're denying the reality of what's going on in the world before our very eyes?
Yeah, we as a country, I like that analogy of our being on ostrich mode. The Center for Science and Democracy was actually founded on a lot of those concerns you raised about the direction of the country when it came to thinking about facts and incorporating them into the decisions that we make. So I think it's multi-pronged in source and how it sort of we got to this situation. But I think the bottom line is that we really need to get back to a place where we respect facts and we use science to inform decisions. And if we don't, as you said, I think there's a grave danger that we face as a nation. You know, where would we be if we hadn't used science up to this point? I think we'd be in a very different place. We'd be a very different country if we hadn't incorporated science to be able to have clean air and clean water and free of a lot of contagious diseases that we now have vaccines for. There's all kinds of benefits that science has provided us as a society. And so it's crucial that we don't turn our back on that. We need to make sure, as you said, that our children and their children are also able to enjoy these benefits. I'm a mom. I have a young child, and I think about that a lot. And I wonder what kind of world he's going to grow up in, because I want him to grow up in a world that respects science and that uses it to better society and give us a more equal and a more advanced society. And I think that we need to put a lot of pressure to make sure that we can continue to do that. And I think part of that formula is to make sure that there's transparency around decisions we're making, and decision makers are held accountable for the decisions they make and who's influencing them and how those decisions are made. And so I think we all need to keep a watchful eye and make sure that we can push back when science is being sidelined. And that's what I get up and do every day.
Well, I thank you for your service, Gretchen.
thank you.
Seriously, no, thank you. What are the ways in which your organization and others can push to insulate government regulations and regulators from politically and economically driven efforts to corrupt science for the benefit of special interests?
It's a good question. I think we're seeing special interests infiltrate a lot of our policies now, and so it's happening in multiple places, and we need to push back. One thing that I think about a lot lately is that I think if anything, this year shows that there is power in protest and in pushing back and in really being active politically. We saw, you know, that this administration and this Congress is responsive to a lot of public pressure, and we've seen that on a few issues so far. So I think those give us somewhat of a roadmap to follow and think further about how we can apply that in the space around scientific policies and how we can make sure that we do have ways to hold decision makers accountable, that we are demanding transparency and accountability around their actions. And so I think there's going to be a combination of applying political pressure in the appropriate places, applying legal pressure in the courts, which many groups beyond ours are working very heavily in. And I think there's just a lot we can do to mitigate damages in the short term. You know, we won't be able to stop everything from happening, but we can make sure that the worst of things don't happen, and we can prevent a lot of the most terrible things from happening. So I think we can do a lot in the short term, and there's a lot of hope we can have for the long term and what we can accomplish and bring back to science and decision making.
Well, just one quick comment before we have to say goodnight, and that is this is not an academic exercise here. What goes on at the EPA actually affects people's lives. What the EPA does or doesn't do can actually save lives or condemn people to lives of diseases which could have been prevented. From your perspective as a scientist yourself, what's at stake here in terms of lives, the lives of Americans out there?
That's right. There's a lot at stake. The EPA, people often think of it as being an environmentally focused agency, but its mission is actually about public health too. And a lot of what the agency does now does protect people from issues. And the more that we defund the agency or remove scientists from the process or limit the resources that they have, the less they're going to be able to protect us from all of these hazards. And so it's everything from the air pollution that we talked about. It's also water quality and making sure that they're in charge of maintaining the Safe Drinking Water Act and implementing that. It's also chemical hazards, which is a whole other area of concern now, since many of the Trump administration appointees at the EPA on the chemical safety side have actually come directly from the chemical manufacturing industry. So the Nancy Beck, the woman who was in charge of, she was the chief regulatory scientist at the American Chemistry Council, which is the chemical manufacturing lobbying group. And so she's now running that program at the EPA. And so that's going to do a lot of damage to chemical policies that we have. And so this is chemicals that might be unsafe in our products. So making sure that kids' toys and any other products we might buy in the store don't have unsafe chemicals in them. And so there's a lot of unseen benefits that the EPA provides because we have scientists working behind the scenes to keep our air clean and our water clean and our products safe from chemicals. And so I think the rubber is going to hit the road if you're soon in a situation where we don't have that science feeding into the process. And I am worried it will affect people and harm people across the country that who are going to be affected by this. You know, we know, of course, the air pollution doesn't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican or what state you live in, you know, it's going to affect us all. And so I think we need to be diligent in making sure that we can minimize what happens there and keep people protected.
Gretchen, thank you so much for joining us. And maybe you can give out the web address for your group, Union of Concerned Scientists. How would they find you on the net?
Absolutely. We are at ucsusa.org, and I hope you'll join us. We have citizens and scientists all around the country and the world that are working on these issues and thinking hard about how to push back. And so thank you so much for having me, Scott.
Yeah, appreciate all you do, and appreciate the time tonight. Thanks, Gretchen.
Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. That's Gretchen Goldman, research director with the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists.